Guide us as we learn about what you want for our bodies and for our lives in all ways. Through Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, I think the first thing we need to think about is, what do we think about when we think of exercise? What pictures come to your mind?
Jane Fonda.
Okay.
Jane Fonda.
Okay. What do you think about when you think about Jane Fonda?
Too much.
Perfect body.
Too much. Okay. Perfect body. Is that real motivating?
No.
Okay. Okay. So we get some negative images. What other images besides Jane Fonda do we get when we think about exercise?
Joggers. People.
Okay. Joggers.
Walking and eating.
Okay. Evening walk. What? We're just putting together some mental images right now. What other things?
Work.
Okay.
Work. We'll make that big capital letters. Work.
Biking.
Okay. Biking.
Gardening. Yard work.
Okay.
Aerobics.
Aerobic classes.
Okay. Aerobics. Classes.
Yoga.
Yoga. Okay. Other thoughts?
Hiking.
Hiking. Well, I told them you better think about that one. What else?
Taking time for it.
Okay. Time. That big bugaboo in our lives. What else?
Swimming.
Swimming. Okay. So we've listed some types of exercise. We've listed some feelings. About exercise, we've talked about some not so good feelings, too much, perfect body, work. What good feelings do you have about exercise?
Makes you feel good.
Okay, tell me more about that. What do you mean by feel good?
More energy. You don't feel so stiff.
Okay, energy.
Limber.
Limber.
Or mentally alert.
Mentally alert. Alert. Okay. Any
Sometimes
other?
Sometimes you just put everything out of your mind except what you're doing.
Okay. Mind clearing. Okay. Tension release. Okay. Other thoughts?
Weight loss.
Okay. I take it that goes in the positive column. Okay, and we had some negatives here. And so, any other feelings when you think about the term exercise? Overall, do you have, let's try one more thing here. We'll just kind of keep those things in mind, because I think you have brought out a lot of things. Both the variety of things that can get us exercise, and we're going to talk more about that, because we just barely scratched the surface with that. But also the idea that that there are feelings that go with exercise. Overall, do you think of exercise as a positive or a negative thing?
Positive.
Positive. Hey! This group's half there. Because we are thinking of it as positive, and we had a bunch of positives over here. Maybe I should have left those. Okay. How many of you think you get enough exercise? Okay. Hey, great. Preaching to the converted. Okay. Those of you who get enough exercise, how do you do it?
Walk.
Okay. How do you get in the walks?
I walk back and forth to work.
Okay.
Meet a friend.
Okay. Yeah. Do it with a friend. Okay.
First thing I do in the morning is stretching.
Okay. Limber up.
Stretch. Yeah, I do that.
First thing.
Stretch.
Do it with a spouse. Okay.
Well, I hope that's also a friend.
Some cases.
A pleasant place to walk.
Okay.
I think habit plays a great part.
Okay.
Have you heard the story that if you do something daily for 3 weeks, it becomes a habit? How many things have we said, I'm going to do it, and you last about 4 days, and it kind of falls apart? It does take time to build habits. I'm sorry, someone else?
Swim,
okay. So some of the things that help you exercise are to find ways to make it a part of your regular day. Good surroundings, things that you enjoy. Types of exercise that maybe some people enjoy more than others.
Park away from where you're going to shop or so you walk some. Have you walked?
Park farther away?
Yeah.
Take the steps instead of an elevator.
Okay. How many of us have crammed when we get to the grocery store because there's no parking places close the door? and then we wonder why we've got a little extra right there. Yeah. Okay, so some of you already have some things that are really helping you to get the exercise you need in your lives. I heard a couple people saying that they're a little bit concerned about exercise, and maybe just a little bit worried about it. What are some of the things that we may be afraid of or may get in the way of our exercising?
Hurting afterwards, probably.
Okay. Pain
or fear thereof.
Yeah. Okay.
Falling while hiking.
Okay. Especially for older people or people with osteoporosis, fear of falls can be an issue.
Time is a big issue, I think.
Right.
Time.
Okay.
Weather in Minnesota when it's 20 below, you know, walking.
Part of my standard annual exam pattern is, you know, do you smoke? How do you eat? And do you get some exercise? I can't tell you the number of people who say, well, I walk in the summer. So that's definitely an issue.
Safety can be an issue.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I want to walk in the evenings or in neighborhoods that you're not
familiar. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Traffic patterns.
Night. Traffic.
Knee injuries.
Okay. Fear of, especially after injury. Okay. Okay. Anything else that kind of gets in your way?
Illness.
Okay. I've certainly experienced that. I'll get really going on an exercise program and I'll get sick and quit for a week and there goes the habit. What else? Let's see a show of hands of people who don't like to exercise.
What is Linda?
Okay, not too many of us. But I think we have to admit that we usually find a way to do things we want to do. And I think that this one, time and liking the exercise. How many of you have exercise bicycles at home? How many of you use your exercise bicycles regularly? One left out of the 9 or 10 people that had the thing up. I have come to the conclusion that exercise bicycles are a conspiracy by the people who sell dust rakes.
But I use it regularly, periodically.
Okay.
So I don't want to get rid of it.
All right. So some of us get up our motivation and use those exercise bikes sometimes and pull back from the
grandchildren.
Get graduated and fall off of them and feel like my children. And I don't want to pan exercise equipment for people who find it useful, but one thing I do want to say right now is be very careful before you invest a lot of money in equipment for exercise that you know you will use it. An interesting phenomenon, I find that probably 5% of exercise bicycles are used regularly. At least among my patients that admit it, at least 50% of Nordic tracks are used. And what I haven't figured out is whether Nordic tracks are that much more fun or whether they cost so much that you don't buy one unless you're really motivated to use it.
Yeah.
But think about that. The same thing goes for treadmills. A decent treadmill, one that won't break down on you after 3 weeks, is going to cost you a fair amount of money. And
how much for range?
Oh, I have not personally priced them lately, but under $300 to $500, they're not much good. They basically have your weight is going to come down at 6 times your body weight each time your foot plants on that thing, and that's pretty hard on a piece of equipment. And if it isn't sturdy enough, the whole thing's going to start falling apart. I've not personally gone out and looked at these machines at various stores, but they do tend to run significantly more. I see a lot of treadmills and ski machines on garage sales, and if you look at them, the ones that people paid $100 to $200 for that they've got in their garage sales for $20, they look like they're going to fall apart any minute.
Also, I think with equipment, you need to be very careful because a lot of the equipment is concentrating in one body area, and it does not condition you. I'm a former Phi Ed teacher and have done years and years of adult exercise class. There's very few machines that you need, unless you have a health problem sometimes, then it's beneficial. Before I know, we have weights and stuff laying around, you know, the kids wanted them, and it was really a waste.
Okay. So we've looked at some of the things that might give us some trouble. Let's kind of take a look at some of these. We had somebody telling us that they found time by walking in the morning, first thing. What are some other ways that we can get around this pressure of time? How many of you have spare time? Oh, there's a few people here, the older folks that don't have young families at home and careers outside of the home at the moment. What? I saw a couple of hands up. Yeah.
A routine, like myself, I ride my exercise bike in the morning when I get up, and I do. Then I do my other exercises before I go to work because I've been told I have back trouble, and the doctor told me if I didn't do any exercises in the morning, you know, you're not stretching stretching your back, and if it's not stretched, then it's not gonna work as well the whole day. So I have this routine every morning, and then I do exercises again at night.
Another thing is to be with somebody. You have someone else if you're doing these things with.
The whole idea of encouraging each other or being concerned about letting someone else down, that you're more likely to stick with it. Yes?
You can use time. We've been doing on the bus out here, kind of kiddingly, but I'm always working and trying to get especially retired folks to exercise. You can fit it in, like when I'm working at lunchtime, if it's nice, get outside and take a walk. Driving in the car, it's surprising what you can do while you're driving with cruise control today.
She's got us exercising in the bus every day.
Okay.
That's great.
Why are you riding the bus every day?
We're going 4 days to get off here.
Oh, I'm sorry, the bus tour group. I was thinking of the bus from here to Lucerne. Why are you riding that every day?
We take a class, and I think that body recall, doesn't have to be any fear of that, but it's the camaraderie, that is.
Okay.
The fun, and you pay for it.
Okay.
So
let's talk a minute about that. motivates us? What's the best motivator?
Sweet, I'll be held.
Okay, okay. So something positive.
Fun.
Feel good.
Okay. We're going to talk two kinds of motivation. Long-term and short-term. And you're going to have a little of both or it isn't going to last. So the long-term motivation, several of you have said, good health. Mm-hmm. And the short-term, someone mentioned feel good. Someone else said fun. Other things.
Relaxation. It's a great relaxation.
Okay.
Keep the weight off.
And see your friends.
Okay. Physical in 2 weeks.
Fellowship. Okay. Okay. We have the same medium here. Special events, that wedding or reunion or something. I must say I had more motivation the month before I was coming out here than I did before that to get in shape. Okay. Anybody see any negative motivations here? They don't work. I ought to is one of the lousiest motivations around. Find something that you can say, I want to, and you will do much better. I ought to control my weight. My doctor says I ought to. It won't work. If you say, you know, I'll feel good if I can do this or that, you'll be a lot more motivated. Yeah.
Something I tried last year, I don't enjoy exercising by myself. And yet I needed to do more than what I was getting with friends that would, you know, cooperate with me and go with me. So I also wanted to read more. And that to me, sitting and reading, you know, I'm not accomplishing anything. So I would put that aside. So I started checking out the cassette tapes at the library and we'll go walk the stairs at one of the tall buildings in our town and listen to my story while I'm walking. And I get more done than I ever have before on my own.
Okay. Great. Okay. Or if you, I see, I was telling somebody I drive to Bible study at 6:15 in the morning. That in itself, I could probably walk. But I notice all these ladies with their tape players at 6:15 in the morning. If it makes you more motivated to do it, do combine it with something else. There are some people who find that that motivation of paying ahead of time just sort of keeps them going to the classes. Use what you need to use to get yourself motivated, but in general, look for positive motivations. They work much, much better. Yes?
I had a problem with my medical. And I miss words sometimes. Doctor told me to get back and swim.
Uh-huh.
The neurologist said, get in there, put your head down in the water, and swim, lady, and your memory will come back.
Uh-huh.
It has. Not completely. Sometimes I want to say a word, and I have no idea. I can see it in my mind, but I can't say it.
Okay.
But it has been a great help, where you remember things that you forget. Didn't even know that you're forgotten. So
as we exercise our bodies, there's an effect on the rest of us too. Mm-hmm. On our emotions, it's very clear that exercise is helpful in depression. Also that it helps mental alertness. There's no question about that. You don't have to have had a stroke or an injury for that to be true. Mm-hmm.
Jenny, would you just comment from the physical standpoint on aerobics?
Uh-huh.
You know, what are the pros and cons?
Okay.
Is that a good?
Okay.
Good,
I think we'll get to some of the hows in a little bit.
Oh,
but,
okay. We can save it this one.
Yeah. Well, no, that's an important issue. We need to talk about picking a form of exercise, especially the concerns about pain. Getting back down to this one that this group didn't seem to be too upset about, if you don't like a form of exercise, don't torture yourself by trying to do that one. Find a different form of exercise. But try things. Don't say, I know I won't like that. I have a lot of people right now who said, oh, I don't know how to swim. Oh, I'm afraid of the water, et cetera, et cetera. We have an excellent program in our community of water aerobics done with a belt that you absolutely can't turn upside down and you're sticking out about this much all the time. And I have several patients who have just, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like the next thing. But we got to try that and they're delighted. That's certainly not for everybody. It involves going to a specific place at a specific time, which doesn't fit for everybody. But be open to different kinds of things. And also, if you don't like the time element, Karen had a wonderful suggestion. Do your exercise along with something else. I know people who do their daily prayer while they're exercising. I know people that listen to tapes. I know people that do their exercise while folding clothes, going to and from work, during lunch hour at work. There are places that you can do that. Also, let's go back to this time issue for just a minute. Anybody feel guilty about taking time to exercise?
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
I think we all do if we're going to try and get this blame housework done. You know, you don't like to take time out. And my son, who's a nurse anesthetist and gets up early and goes to work, says, Mom, there's always time for exercise. You just take it.
Okay. What are we saying to ourselves when we say, I don't have time to exercise, I have to do the housework?
You don't want to do it.
Okay, that there's a message there that I think we have to recognize, because I think if we articulate it, if we actually say it out loud or write it down, we can see how stupid it is.
You can do
which
that.
Is more important, housework or taking care of your body?
Taking care of your body.
Okay. I think we've done ourselves a horrible disservice to look at the great commandment that says, love your neighbor as yourself, and say, oh gosh, I gotta love my neighbor more, I gotta love my neighbor more, I gotta love my neighbor more. Who else do you have to love?
Yourself.
Yeah. And taking care of exercise is recognizing that in order to be a healthy person, to have the capacity to do for others, you have to take care of yourself too. And that you don't have to feel guilty about it. If I don't get anything else across, you don't have to feel guilty about taking time to take care of yourself. We talked a little bit about illness as something that gets us out of exercise. Acute illness should be a cause for decreasing the intensity of your exercise. That depends on what the illness is. It depends on what your original state of health is. But it's not time to start an exercise program or increase an exercise program during acute illness. If you have a fairly rigorous program, you should at least cut the intensity back by half during illnesses involving fevers. We're talking a temperature over 101. Us grown-ups don't tend to get those real often. But listen to your body. If your body says, I can't do what I usually do, I know when I had just the best exercise program I started about 6 months ago. I was about 2 months into it, really proud of myself, and I had my specific time set out. One Saturday morning, I went over and I got in the treadmill, and I just could not push my speed to where I was used to, and I was going, what the heck is this? And I got home and took my temperature, and my temperature was 101.5. And I got chilled and I said, oh, my body was telling me you're not healthy. So listen to your body, especially if your body says, I can't do what you're used to having me do. Stop and take inventory about why that is. Chronic illness, if your body tells you the right answer, listen to it. If you have concerns about a particular illness, diabetes, high blood pressure, whatever, speak with your physician. Most chronic illnesses, if they are under control, should not be a barrier to an exercise program. They may cause you to raise the intensity or the duration of your exercise more slowly than someone without that problem. It may mean that you need to adjust the other things you do for that illness. I think this is especially true of diabetes. Exercise decreases the need for insulin and other medications for diabetes. It also increases the number of calories that we can eat and use up. And so changes in the food intake and or use of medication during exercise with diabetes is very important. For all of us, it's important to have a regular pattern of exercise, but the younger we are and the healthier we are, the more we can bend those rules. An insulin-dependent diabetic is probably the exact opposite of the, I mean, I talked to a couple of staff people here that hike to Lyman Lake, which is 9 miles each way, 18 miles total. And, you know, they've done, you know, a couple, 3 mile hikes a couple of days before. They can probably get by with, I can't, you can't. Yeah. But a diabetic is someone who needs to plan at least one meal in advance what exercise they're going to do, try to do their exercise at the same time each day, and at a point that is appropriate for the medication they're using. You don't want to exercise when your blood sugar is at its lowest because exercise is going to drop it mm-hmm. further. Some diabetics, depending on how tight their control is, may actually need to cut back on their insulin the dose before the exercise is going to take place. But that's unusual. Even most diabetics simply have to take it easy and do a regular amount of exercise and just build it into their days. Any more questions about acute versus chronic illness?
You made a good comment there for diabetics, which applies to each one of us in this room. The best and most effective exercise is to have it at the same time each day.
Mm-hmm.
It's more effective for your entire system. Mm-hmm. And that'll discourage you most quickly if you think, well, I'll do it early one day and I'll wait till I get home from work or sure. after lunch.
But just like taking medication, it's better to do it when you think of it than to say, oh, I forgot to do it in the morning, I'll skip it. The other point is that if you're doing aerobic exercise specifically for heart and lung conditioning, you may not wind up doing that every day. You don't have to, and you don't want to do the same strenuous program every day. You know, it's perfectly okay to say, I'm going to do it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or I'm going to do it Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. What you don't want to do with vigorous exercise is do it all on Saturday and Sunday and nothing during the week. Yeah, that's called the weekend warrior, and it's a real ask for injuries. Okay, weather. How can you deal with weather?
Mall walkers.
Okay. Indoor alternatives?
No, not one.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that one.
Health club,
okay. So malls or health clubs. What else?
Warmer clothes.
Yeah, dress right. Or change activity.
Change location sometimes is necessary.
Sure. You may cross-country ski in the wintertime where you walk or bike in the summertime. One of the problems for those of us from the upper Midwest, the Minnesotans in the group, including myself, is that you can't count on your outdoor weather for things like bicycling and skiing. You don't go directly from bicycle season to ski season. There's a lot of slop season in between there. And so you may need to be flexible and have alternative plans. I think by and large, and you're speaking to somebody who usually runs on a treadmill at 10 o'clock at night, usually you will be more motivated and get more benefit out of outdoor exercise. But there are certainly benefits to be gained from indoor exercise if there is some kind of a barrier to your doing it outdoors.
I think this is another time when you have to be very
conscious of safety, particularly those of us who have arthritis or something like that. Because ice, you know, you can fall so easily.
People with mobility.
I don't even attempt to walk outside.
Do you walk outside in the summertime?
Yes.
Okay. So there are issues here. You have to balance things. Yes, it's nice to get all that vitamin D from the sun on your skin. There's some psychological stuff that we aren't even quite sure why it happens, but there probably really is something called seasonal affective disorder, which is a depression that comes in the wintertime that is markedly improved by exposure to natural sunlight. Yes?
I know there's a number of rural people here from Minnesota, probably also in Washington, Idaho, they might have more isolated areas. Check with your local high school. So many of them now are opening their doors at 6 a.m. to allow for walking in the winter months conditions.
Sure. Same with malls. A lot of malls are open. I even have people that will go to the large department stores, the Kmarts and the Targets, and just walk up and down the aisles. And if your Kmart's like ours, I don't know how you could get up any speed because you're dodging it. But clearly in the malls you can do that. Some of the malls even open before the stores open, so that you're not tempted to go into the stores. There aren't that many people around. Any of us that live in Minnesota, if you live near the Mall of America, it's a mile and a quarter around just one level.
What's the pros and cons of exercising in the morning over in the evening, which is better?
Because of the body's natural rhythm, probably if you have total freedom to choose, I would say probably about 2 hours after breakfast. If you're trying to exercise too early in the morning, you need to be extra careful about limbering up because of the fact that you've been relatively still during the night. The other part of it is that you don't want to exercise on a full stomach, and yet you do need those glycogen stores, that short-term sugar storage for that kick of energy. And your glycogen stores tend to be low before breakfast because although most of us that are not pregnant have glycogen stores that will last us 12 to 18 hours, if you put the stress of exercise on top of that, you'll hit the wall. You'll do that faster before breakfast than you will when it's been more recent that you've eaten. But you don't want to do it too soon after you've eaten, because when you're beginning to digest your food, there's blood supply that's pulled into the blood vessels of the stomach and the intestines and not as available. That's the old why you don't swim for an hour after a meal or you'll get cramps, is that whole concern about having adequate oxygenation and blood supply to your muscles instead of your stomach. Plus the fact that you got a big stomach full of stuff and you'll just plain get nauseated if you exercise too hard. So I would say that the other problem with exercising in the evening is that exercise revs you up and may not be the best way if you have any kind of difficulty getting to sleep. It's usually best to have finished exercise by 2 hours at least before you're going to go to bed. You really want the exercise to liven you up for the day rather than to rev you up when you're trying to go to sleep. So, but again, if the only time you have in your day is in the evening, by all means, do it an hour or so after dinner, or do it before dinner and have a later dinner. Get it in. Like I say, I work 1 to 8 one night a week, and I'm usually about 9:30. I'm over on the treadmill after work. And for me, it's a good way to unwind from being all keyed up at work before I go home. But I also can't get to sleep when I first get home. I have to read the newspaper or something to wind down from the exercise, and you need to take that into account. So, good question. Safety, I think, especially for women and for older people, safety is an issue. Being together with someone else is helpful. Being careful about whether the sidewalks have been shoveled or whether the potholes have been filled. I just about sprained my ankle twice in a row going up to my chalet here. There's not a very big hole, but when you've got ankles like mine, it's there. Neighborhood can be an issue. It's unfortunately true that although
you can be safe in the worst neighborhood at the right time under the right circumstances, and you can be unsafe in what looks like a nice, safe environment. That there are certainly rules of common sense about what is a good thing to do and what isn't. But rather than being barriers and saying, I can't exercise because it's night, what are your options? Roadblocks only mean we have to broaden our horizons. I think so often we say, I can't because. And we need to change that script to, I have to be more creative because. Do you see what I'm saying? There is no such thing as I can't exercise because. Okay? I may have to modify things a lot. Okay, fear of falling. What are some of our options to improve or make falls less of a concern?
Good shoes.
Good shoes. Great. Surface. The only thing I don't like about high schools is most of them have cement floors. If you're using good shoes and you're walking rather than running, I don't think that has to be a barrier. But if you have a choice, the first choice is dirt, assuming that it's nice and level or appropriately banked for curves, or a specific running surface, you know, one of those rubberized thingies that most of us don't have. Second choice would be asphalt or wood, such as a gym floor. It's amazing what a little bit of give in the surface will do for preventing injury. The worst surface is cement, whether that's cement on a sidewalk or whether it's cement underneath the tile on the high school floor. It doesn't have much give, and that makes your shoes doubly important. And I would really suggest that you not run on cement. If you're going to run, you better find a better surface than that. I have some concerns about running, except for the young, really physically fit people anyway. And there's a lot of increase of injury. Okay, let's talk a little bit about pain. How many of you have started an exercise program only to regret it the next morning? Boy, I don't have too many people admitting that one. Okay, let's talk a little bit about how you start an exercise program.
Hopefully it's because the exercise programs are getting better.
That's true. But I think there are always idiots that think, and I've been one of them, I'm not going to be above it. Hopefully the mature group here has managed to figure out that no, their bodies are not totally elastic and that they do have to take care of them. Yeah, but do you listen? The other issue. Let's talk about the three components of an exercise program. Anybody tell me the three things you've got to do when you exercise to have a well-rounded program that's going to be safe and least likely to hit injuries?
Warm up.
Okay. Warm up. Okay.
Cool down.
Okay. We're getting into the timing part of things. But there's three things we need to do with our bodies during the exercise program. What are the three parts of fitness?
Stretching,
okay. That's really, what's the purpose of stretching? To get flexibility. I can't spell.
I don't care.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, so we've got to work on flexibility. What are the other two parts?
Strength and endurance.
Okay, strength and endurance. I knew I had two ringers back here. And a well-rounded exercise program deals with all of these. Let's talk a little bit about these. Why do we need to stretch.
Prevent injuries.
Okay, prevents injuries. Number one reason. When is it best to do your stretching? Well, I heard early in the morning, and certainly after we've been kind of stiffened up at night, it helps to stretch. But where in our exercise program? Should we stretch first? No, why not?
You need to warm up.
Okay, so you warm up first, and that's so that your muscles actually have a working temperature. Does the manufacturer of your car say it's okay to come out of the garage and drive 90 miles an hour when it's 10 degrees outside? Okay. They've usually said you can drive, it used to be you used to leave your car, sit in the driveway for about 3 minutes first. Don't need to do that anymore, but we do need to move at a moderate pace to warm up those muscles. Walk a block, then do your stretching before you begin to jog, for instance. Okay, so flexibility decreases injury. Very, very important. Why do we care about strength?
Osteoporosis.
Okay. Osteoporosis, you don't actually have to work on muscular strength. Weight-bearing exercise is important to put the stress on the bones, because that stress actually helps wake them up to say, we've got to hang on to this calcium. Why do you need the strength? Okay. We call those ADLs, the activities of daily living. There are just times that there is a request on our body for more than our usual amount of strength. And working on strength, the other part of strength is that I heard somebody talking back here about making sure that you don't exercise one part of your body more than the rest of it. You can wind up with more problems with injury. Most of our muscles are in pairs. There's the muscles, the biceps on the front of the arm, the triceps on the back of the arm. On our arms and legs, most of our muscles have an equal and opposite muscle. Same with our necks, backs, etc. If we don't pay some attention to strength, if you get one muscle much stronger than its opposite, you'll wind up with more problems with injuries. So paying some attention to working on strength is important. Endurance, what's that most important for? Yeah.
I was going to ask you, what about certain machines, that like strength machines that have in your house or going on the line, that type of thing?
Okay.
Many of us just don't have that equipment around.
I think we can talk, let's get a little bit about endurance, and we'll go back to how to get some of these things in a minute. Why do we want to have the endurance?
Good for your cardiovascular.
Okay. So, cardiovascular fitness. That's the system we really need the endurance for. Some help for being able to take that hike to Lyman Lake. I'll guarantee you that those of us that haven't gone more than 3 miles would have a lot of sore muscles if we went all the way to Lyman Lake and back in a day. But the main reason is for our cardiovascular systems. What happens when you do endurance training? What happens to your heart rate?
It goes up.
Okay, during the exercise it goes up, but what does it do afterwards?
It decreases.
Okay, what does it do to your blood pressure?
Decreases.
Okay, and so if your heart doesn't pump as often and it doesn't pump as hard, how much wear and tear? Okay. We mentioned cool down. Why do you do the cool down?
Shock, absorb the shock when you're changing your body's activity.
Okay, let's elaborate on that shock concept. What happens if we stop exercise quickly?
Your heart rate bangs if it's a change.
Okay.
Cooling down, it brings it down slowly. Which is
okay. If you don't cool down, your blood pressure can drop so fast you can faint because your blood vessels don't narrow back up again as quickly as your heart rate goes down. What else?
Your muscles tighten up.
Okay. Okay. So you're preventing muscles cramping. Do you know why that happens? If you stop exercising too quickly, your muscles have built up a waste product called lactic acid. If you don't keep the blood flowing fairly vigorously through that area, that lactic acid just kind of sits there and makes the area have too much acid and you get the cramps. So slowly cutting back on the activity allows the lactic acid to clear, allows your heart rate to drop slowly and your blood vessels to tighten back up again so that the blood pressure stays up. About the worst thing you can do is run in from your exercise and jump in a hot shower. Almost guaranteed to make you wilt. Okay, we were going to talk a little bit more about how you can do some of these things. What are some ways to warm up?
Walk slowly.
Okay. Okay, you can walk slowly. What are some of the other ways?
Breathing.
Okay. Deep breathing isn't going to be a lot of exercise unless you're doing something else. Main thing here is you could most of the things that you do for exercise, you could do what you're going to be doing, just at a lower level of intensity. You know, maybe swim across the pool in a side stroke instead of a breaststroke. Walk down the block rather than jogging down the block. Most aerobics tapes begin with some relatively gentle movements. Do Hitchhiker before you do some of the other line dances. Just start out slowly. Stretching.
What about nutrition?
Nutrition?
Let's say, would that be under warm-up? Let's say you drink some orange juice or something.
Okay. Unless you have a diabetic problem where you need to be very specific about balancing your intake with your exercise, probably best to exercise on a relatively empty stomach, but not totally hungry. For exercise of less than an hour, unless it's going to be in a very hot environment, we're going to be losing a lot of fluids through sweating, simply having normal hydration and normal nutrition ahead of time is probably appropriate. I think it's beyond the scope of what we're talking about here to talk about endurance type activities, and there are some special ways to prepare for those. During exercise, you should be drinking either water or an electrolyte drink, depending again on the distance and the types of losses, periodically through the activity. Usually, except for very long endurance activities, let your body be your guide. If you're thirsty, stop and drink. Room temperature water is probably adequate for most of the things that we're doing. If you have a fairly heavy level of exertion, what happens if you drink cold water, ice water?
Cramp.
Yeah, because you're having to divert energy to warming that water up. Room temperature water will also be more satisfying at that point because you'll be able to drink it faster. How fast can you drink cold water? Yeah. Whereas you can drink, especially if you're thirsty, you can drink a couple of cups of room temperature water without much difficulty at all. But drink as your thirst suggests to you during average type activity. Prolonged activity with significant sweating, very, very little, if any, use for things like salt tablets. But if you tend, especially if you take medication that might unbalance the minerals in your body, that's when you may want to look at an electrolyte drink like Gatorade or Sport or something like that, or just plain some variety. The easiest to absorb fluid from the stomach is about half the sugariness of your average fruit juice or soda. It doesn't matter. If you take something like Gatorade or Sport, you'll notice that while it doesn't taste like plain water, it really doesn't taste sweet like juice or pop, and that's because it's got about half the sugar of pop or juice. Now, you can do the same thing if you happen to like juice. Again, you would want to use something that's specifically balanced if you're going to be using it for a long time. But you might find that if you really like some kind of a pick-me-up halfway through your walk or something, you may find that some half-strength fruit juice or watered-down soda may go down better than regular. Yeah.
What do you think about using NutraSweet? I know this is getting off a little bit.
Okay.
That's what I was advised to use instead of sugar.
Okay. There is no nutritional value to NutraSweet. There's no nutritional value to sugar. There are calories to the sugar. NutraSweet is a chemical that is found naturally in meat. You get aspartame every time you eat meat. So you're not getting a whole lot of it here at Holden, but except for people with phenylketonuria, which is a congenital disease that requires very special treatment in infancy, the amount of aspartamine that you get in an occasional soda is no big deal. I think that it's far better to look at why am I bothering with either sugar or aspartamine rather than worrying about which. We should all drink more water and less soda, but I think that's the issue. Why are we eating dessert rather than do we sweeten it with aspartamine? I certainly drink Diet Coke. I'm not proud of myself. I should be drinking water. It's cheaper. It doesn't have phosphates in it that leach calcium out of my bones. But on the other hand, it doesn't rot my teeth.
Well, I give the grandchildren, rather than the Coke, the carbonated, quite often just lemonade made with NutraSweet.
Much better for their teeth. When they do the studies that some people have said, oh gosh, some of these chemicals may cause illnesses in rats. We're talking about the equivalent of 100 cans a day in someone your size. You'd die of water intoxication by that time. So anything done to excess is going to make you sick. I think that variety, like we talked about yesterday, moderation, looking at whole foods in preference to processed things, is appropriate, but I think on a scale of 1 to 10 where our 10 is terrible and 1 is very good for you, we're probably talking a 2. I mean, I don't think it's a big issue. But I think it does cause us to say, why am I spending money on diet soda that has no nutrition in it when I could be drinking water? Would be my only statement there. Okay, I promise that we get back to some hows of stretching and strength training. So I think one of the things that you probably do need to do is to speak with someone who is knowledgeable, whether that's someone who's exercising regularly and you can see that their exercise program is going well, someone who's a professional in the area, the Karens, and I'm sorry, I don't know the lady in the back's name,
Phyllis.
Speak to someone like Karen or Phyllis or a physical therapist. I know I got myself to the point where I had a particular ache that I knew came from doing something wrong, and I walked by the physical therapy department and said, hey, what am I doing wrong? What can I do to stretch that particular area? They taught me a new stretch, and in a week of doing that stretch and my stretches, my exercise program didn't bug me anymore. Think about the different parts of your body. I think that comes first. Make sure that your stretching and strengthening program makes sense to you. You don't have to have a degree in anatomy and physiology to know that your arm has a joint here, a joint here, and a joint here, and that you've got muscles that bend it and muscles that straighten it out, and muscles that bend it and muscles that straighten it out. And the same with your back and with your neck. You know the different positions you can get parts of your body. And if you have a stretching program that takes you to the full, comfortable, end of comfort stretch, there's only a couple things that I recommend people be careful about. Especially for those of us that are past about 40, it's not a good idea to bring your neck back like that in your exercise program. There's a blood vessel back here that as it gets stiffer with age will kink, and you can faint from that. Not a smart move. But you do need to be a little bit careful about the blood flow through your vertebral arteries. So do not do, now it's perfectly fine to tighten these muscles back here, but do it against something. What do you push your head against a wall? What do you push your head against your hands? You can tighten these muscles without bringing your head backwards. Another thing about not so much stretching, which is basically anything that will get those muscles stretched. I think Karen, have you gone through some of the basic stretches in your classes? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think for most of us, it simply involves kind of loosening up the upper body, and I think you can just kind of do that any way you want to. Most people find that for the lower body, that you want to stretch out the fronts of your calves, you want to stretch out the back of your back leg, and then there's another one you do like this, and I can't even remember. I think that stretches this part of your calf. Mm-hmm. But those three stretches, 2-3 times on each side, usually what you want to do is you want to take it to the maximum extent that you comfortably can and then hold it. Some people say 5 seconds, some people say 20 seconds. But the idea is to get to the point where that muscle isn't fighting you anymore and it's letting itself go. And then do those gently. You don't want to jerk and tear anything. You simply want to just say, okay, come on, come on, come on, come on. And then come back out of it slowly. And you're going to do those after you've warmed up a little bit. If you have an area that seems to give you problems after an exercise session, that's a specific area to try to stretch out next time. Or to ask someone, what am I doing that might be irritating that area? Strength. Chuck mentioned the fact that we don't all have universal gyms in our basement. What can you do that'll help make sure that you work on strength?
Dumbbells.
Okay. Again, I don't think you have to have equipment.
Can do.
Okay. Absolutely. A gym, weight. No, literally, I tell people all the time, get an old purse, put some cans, green beans or sacks of rice or something in it, and you got yourself a set of weights. The big thing with the strength is, again, think about what muscles you want to strengthen and how you can do that. They make, you don't need fancy equipment. Your old-fashioned PE, I think all of us are old enough that when we went through PE class, they had us doing jumping jacks and push-ups and stuff like that. You can do, with just the weight of your own body, a lot of strength training. The main thing you want to do is think about what muscles do you need to be strong with, and what am I doing, and how does that strengthen it? Sometimes you get your strength right along with your endurance. What are some of the types of exercise that might give us most of our strength training right along with our endurance training?
Bicycle.
Okay. Bicycle's going to give your lower body the strength in both your flexors and your extensors. Bike for the lower body. What are the three best exercises for exercising your whole body? Okay. Swimming will definitely exercise most of your major muscle groups, especially if you vary your strokes.
Walking,
yes. What can you do to increase the upper body work with walking? Swing your arms. Those of you who are getting good at it, carry a 1 or 2 pound weight in each hand. They make heavy gloves. They make things that go around your wrists. They make things that you can put in your hands to carry. But you can get some stuff going with your upper body. What's the one other one? Okay. And that's why they sell all those cross-country ski machines. Yeah. it is probably the best upper body strengthening exercise other than swimming. Cross-country skiing outdoors, even in Minnesota, is not an all-winter sport. You have to have proper snow. You have to be, I would recommend daylight at least. I'm sure people do moonlight skiing, but only at certain times of the month and appropriate places. So some of those will give you your strength training right along with. Yes?
Jenny, they now come up with poles to walk with.
Mm-hmm.
And my group, we went to the Good Bookstore and got ski poles and put corks on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and we used them to walk with. They weren't the same. They cost $3 to $5 instead of $69.95. You've got your walking poles. If that's not enough weight for you, you can tape a weight of some kind onto the pole. You're forced to use, it's some of us, like, you know, carry the weight, use it, get the upper body strength, but then you forget, and you're, oh yeah, I'm supposed to have my arms up here, and then you forget. With the poles, you can't, because when you put your arms down, they drag on the ground. Definitely, you get comments from people as you're using them without snow, but you're getting the same benefit. So that's something that
the one advantage to the poles that are specifically made for walking, and that's not recommending that you get them, but recommending you recognize the difference. And some of you inventive people may be able to